Franklin Matters Radio Show, number 660 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my Talk Franklin conversation with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and marketing communications specialist, Lily Rivera. We had our conversation in person in Jamie's office in the Franklin Municipal Building. We talk about the Strong Towns event that we had all participated in at the Black Box in the morning, just before our recording session. We talked about the recap of the FinCom meeting, some items of those coming out of the FinCom meeting setting up for the town council meeting this Wednesday, and the critical conversation forum being held on Thursday, the 18th, at the high school to present info on substance abuse and mental health. Links to the key references are included in the show notes. The recording runs about 40 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Jamie and Lily. So, Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR.FM, anywhere on the internet, and 102.9 on the local area FM dial today for another uniquely rescheduled at a last minute in person, and I thank you and appreciate that, Talk Franklin session with our town administrator, Jamie Helen. Jamie, happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Steve.
It is
incredible.
Indeed.
You just threw me a curveball already with Monday.
Monday? What day is it?
I thought it was Friday. I was hoping it was
Friday. We usually do things on Friday, but, you know, things change, schedule, things happen. And joined as well by our marketing communications specialist, Lily Rivera. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy Monday.
She's with the notes already.
She actually was very much with the notes. What most people didn't see was today I walked in early and Alicia and Lily were already here saying their mornings were fabulous. And so that's the kind of personnel we have here in Town Hall. Monday morning, it's 7:45. The staff is saying what a wonderful day it is already.
Right.
Which is really kind of, it is a little bit of a joke, but in seriousness, it is pretty cool to see.
Not a drop of caffeine in our systems either. No coffee.
Ooh,
for all
we'll
that.
Have to. So we'll have to go. Get into that in another session.
Well, that's a good clarification for any of the listeners that thought maybe they had already had their Starbucks, which just opened across the street. It was not coffee. They were naturally happy, ready to come.
Naturally
work.
Happy, yeah. Indeed. And even at the event that we were all just at, which was the town hall. There'll be more on that. I've got a separate post. There'll be an audio recording of that separately. But even walking into that, I was saying Happy Monday to the folks, and they were looking at me as if I had a strange head. It was like, why can't it be Monday? Happy. They were accusing me of just because it was retired.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, every day is a happy day.
Every day is a happy day. Mm-hmm. And I think, sun's shining brightly.
That helps.
We have a great staff. I think, funny enough, I really do mean it. You know, I think a lot of the staff here, when we come to work, we prioritize that, Steve. You know that. I mean, but for the listeners, we ask people questions, in the interviews that are fairly unconventional because we want people to have fun and enjoy the people they work with and enjoy what they're doing. Every Monday is a happy Monday. We are not Garfield. We are happy when we come to work on Monday.
No. Exactly. You don't have to come into work. You get to come into work.
You get to come to work. Yes. That's right. Yeah. And this morning, great event with Congressman Auchincloss, Rep Roy, Councilor Frangillo on Strong Towns.
Strong Towns.
Not to go down a huge rabbit hole, but it was a lot of fun talking about sustainability and the health and well-being of cities and towns and kind of following, maybe a modernized version of words we've heard in the past of, smart growth, transit-oriented development, edge cities, talking about some of these other concepts that have been kicking around about development and growth. And it was nice to see the forest from the trees a little. You know, we get so bogged down, Steve, you watch all the meetings, Lily, you've been getting integrated. Mm-hmm. We get so into the weeds and the quicksand and the trees of each proposal or everything we hear at the planning board or the council or the school committee. And it's nice from time to time to have events like that where you can kind of see the big picture of it all. And I think one thing I quickly came away from out of that is we're doing a lot of great stuff here.
I second that.
We have a lot of federal assistance coming in and we'll get our fair share and be competitive. But I do think, we're doing a lot of great stuff here. We were just talking off camera about my soon-to-be trademarked term called Google Syndrome, which is instantaneous gratification. We just, if we think it, we want it, because that's what we're used to now with the internet and with social media. But growth and development typically is more like a jigsaw puzzle. It fits together over time. And right now, I think with the work that we're doing here in Franklin, you know, hopefully we're setting ourselves up to have the four corners of the puzzle built by next summer with the downtown zoning study and the MassWorks grant and some of the other infrastructure improvements. But it was a really fun event. I know you came away with a bunch of fun points. We haven't talked to Lily about it yet, but maybe in a minute.
We can kind of talk out loud as we're doing this. Obviously, this is the draft portion, but it's also being recorded, so that's okay. We're going to live by what we talk about anyway. But a couple of the key pieces, one also a reinforcement for me and what I do in terms of the citizen engagement piece, because to your point, people do have the mindset that everything's going to happen today, everything's going to happen tomorrow, and if it doesn't, it's a problem. Excuse me, there is a process, and we spend a lot of time talking about the cycle, whether it's the budget cycle, or which is effectively all through the year. There are phases of it, and it continues to adjust. In the strong towns, there was the four-point plan, and I won't go elaborate into that, but it's a process, and it's an adjustment, and it's a project management skill that I got taught and then reinforced. You always, when you do a project, you look back as to how did you do, and you learn from it and go forward, and that all takes time. I think it was an African proverb I picked up just quickly, but it is germane to this. If you want to walk somewhere fast, go alone. If you really want to get there and be sustainable, take somebody with you. And that effectively is what we're trying to do, right? We don't all yet have, you know, the 2028. What is Franklin gonna be? We've got some ideas, but I think if anything, there are multiple ideas, and you're gonna be addressing it as you get into the branding piece, and that's gonna help coalesce as to what we're gonna look like, what do we wanna be in the future. But in order to get there, you can't go alone. Sarah can't go alone with the schools. Everybody has to come along together in order to make that happen. And it's not going to be overnight.
It's not going to be overnight. We're the tortoise in the race. We always have been in government. And there's a reason for that, because we don't exile any portion of the public. And with the civic engagement, you know, in Franklin, I think at times we do struggle from some of that. But also, I've been told so many times by people, they're really happy. How do you engage somebody who's happy with the services they get? You know, no one is eternally 100% happy with everything, but you know, those are challenges too, actually, with parents that are really happy with the educational product their kids getting, then therefore they're not as apt to show up to budget hearings because their kids getting a great education they're happy with. You know, I'm just saying that overall, we, you know, people do tend to get engaged and arrive when they see a problem that they want to step up, where they feel like their investment of their time on a on a weeknight, or over the course of a year, or over the course of a decade, when they feel that return on investment is going to come to their life, they are going to spend that time coming to those meetings and getting involved in those projects. You know, and I hope here over the next 8 months, as we get the public charrette started, you know, public visioning sessions. One thing I did like by the speaker, which of course feeds my own, a little bit my own bias, is just get out there and talk. You know, just had a meeting with the staff even before that about the downtown zoning study. And I, my comment really honestly was, if you can ask them, is we're making this way too complicated. We need to just get out, have a forum to get people talking and get them saying, what is it that I want? You know, Lily showed this incredible video from the city of Boston at a branding thing a couple weeks ago. And the reason why I really emphasized and I wanted her to show it, when she showed it to me, was just that people just want to know that their feelings were heard. I want more, you know, I want Sweet Greens in town, right? I want more coffee shops. I want someplace to bring the kids, like Apex Center. I just, you know, what is it that you're looking for in the next 10 years? You know, I think the speakers today kind of confirmed that just get out there and talk, just get out there and listen, right? And I thought that was a good way of some civic engagement. So it was a fun event this morning. I know it's not what we intended to, but we'll talk more about it. But
we're flexible. I mean, life gives us opportunities, and we take them when we can. And just for the record as well, Charles Marone, if I pronounce his name properly, from Strong Towns, was the other speaker who we hadn't referenced already. And it was interesting, too, how it tied together to the extent that, and we'll replay Kobe's story, but when he started to consider running for town council for the open spot in December, he started diving in, doing research as he does. He checked out Auchincloss along the way, and in Auchincloss's bio is a link to Strong Towns, and that's how he got into the Strong Towns realm and work, and it certainly has helped him as he's becoming, you know, the servant of us, effectively, in the town. So, but I think the other piece, and we're kind of segueing nicely back into our agenda, the FinCom meeting last week was talking about budget and adjustments, and we talked about the budget cycle and how it's ongoing, and this is effectively adjustments as we're closing out this phase of the budget and cleaning up before we get into the tax rate hearing, which is another milestone before you get into the other capital planning, the other operational budget, which I'm sure we'll be talking more and more about as we go forward.
It's gonna be a lot to talk about. I mean, the germane point for a lot of listeners, every November, approximately, the town does consider a budget amendment. And what most folks don't realize is that, like their own budget at home, or like their own company budget if they're in the private sector, they try to look out a year and anticipate what revenues they have. And when we do the budget in May, you know, one, the state budget isn't complete yet. And for those out there that make
that's another story,
always tells me why that's ridiculous. It's because that's the way it's been done for 100 years, 200 years, and that's the way the cycle works. And so the state money is not 100% by that point. Usually we have good numbers, but you try to convert those to the actuals. Revenues, we try to check the at the quarter to one-third mark. We check the revenues for local receipts, licenses, hotels, meals. We try to check various taxes that we get through fees and permits. We look at the trends through 3 or 4 months. We also look at the trends for 3 or 4 months of the building year. We try to close up by the fall and say, okay, where have we been? What do we have on the horizon?
Right.
How's that going to impact our revenues? And then also we tend to look at unforeseen circumstances. And then we look at year-to-dates in terms of town budgets. You know, are people on their budget? It's kind of a third of the way check-in through the fiscal year to make sure that what we approved back in May is sound. We correct things such as the debt service line item, some of the other speculative revenues and expenditures we have in there. And so what we try to do is tie it all up and try to make everything as sound as possible to make sure we were on the right road. And then we that's the precursor. We have to do that, as you know, Steve, by statute before the tax rate hearing, which has to be done pretty much the first week in November, December, excuse me. Council meetings have been operating like this for decades. This is, for the average new listener on the podcast, this is not some new thing that came in recently. This is the way state law works. Most of the financial process is all etched out in state law. So if people don't like the process, they're going to have to try to focus mainly through changing it at the state law level, and that is going to be extraordinarily, if not impossible, to do. So we try to encourage people who are trying to educate themselves about the budget process to work within the process that's already been defined. It's the best way to learn about it, and it's the best way to know the machinations as well as the checks and balances of the whole process. And so at this week's meeting, they're going to be considering some budget event adjustments, mainly revolving around some small increases and some small decreases to a handful of departments, namely the police, fire, the health, the school department, regional dispatch center, and then also dealing with some appropriations due to the expected revenue that's coming in through the two host community agreements for the cannabis facilities, Botera, which is open down on 1256 West Central, down by the hospital, and then soon Netta will be opening up their store on Grove Street. And so those are the big issues, budgetary speaking, right now, and then we'll be looking forward, as you mentioned a minute ago, to the tax rate hearing, the first meeting, which is December 1st, right after Thanksgiving.
And within the details, and clearly there'll be more coming at the town council meeting, but in the overall revenue expectations, there was a net drop in terms of, and the other akin to is, you've got a plan, you put it together, you did the doctor's check, you walked into the facilities and your temp check, etc. Yep. Oh, things are close, but not exactly, so we need to make an adjustment. So I think net numbers are about 400,000 or thereabouts, which generally across the budgets, as you mentioned, some here, pluses, some here, minuses. And the school department also has a minor adjustment that they'll have to accommodate as well.
Yep. And just for the listeners who are interested in that, I think the school budget under the proposal would see about a $94,000, a little less than a $94,000 decrease, which was a situation where everybody knew that our new growth revenue estimates were not going to come in at the 10-year projected average. Mm-hmm. We really felt confident in that, and it came out true. And so at the time, that's kind of the cause and effect that was discussed, that if we want to increase the school budget, you know, actually at the time, if you want to know, it was 200,000.
Right.
And we were going to go for 1 million in new growth revenue estimates, even though the 10-year average was 1.2.
Right.
So I actually gave them an extra 200,000 to compensate for that bump, knowing that it could come in a little lower. And here we are looking at 100,000. So actually, they ended up in the end
about
still made
increase.
Up about another 100,000, which was, I think, you know, for the superintendent and the school committee and Miriam, you know, it certainly was a well worth risk to take. So, you know, while the negativity may be out there, or some people may say, why is this happening? You know, that was the original dichotomy that went back in March before we put the budget out. And the rest of the stuff, to your point, Steve, are fairly routine, unforeseen expenses. A few savings here and a few extra expenses here, like the police department, because the deputy chief or sergeant and lieutenant have all retired in the last few months. So we have to do some additional personnel recruitment and some assessment centers and stuff. So mostly the big takeaway, despite all those things, is revenues seem to be on target.
That's a key
and,
piece, yes.
Which is huge. And all of our departments are still well on budget. So, you know, at the third, you almost want to say the quarter way, right? Because it's quarters, but it's really a third of the year.
Right.
At the third of the way check-in, you know, everything for this fiscal year seems to be quite sound at this point.
Yeah, it's all well and good, and that's part of the process and part of the content and the context that we try to do with this session, in addition to all the other meeting reportings that we do as well. Recapping as well from last week, the town council met again for the new session, and that was one of the other pieces, and we talked about it, Tom Mercer, in the recap on our quarterbacking session, but due to the charter specification that the first council new session would be the second Wednesday of November, that resulted, because when the meeting was originally scheduled, it was according to the first and the third normal scheduling. Yep. And then you realize, oh, we can't do that because this is an election, so you need to reschedule. Minor matter, but we're sticking to what we need to do.
You know, I don't think any of us, even the town attorney, didn't realize it. And then he admittingly woke up in the middle of the night and a light bulb went off on November 3rd. And, you know, we don't go through this every year. Last year was a presidential election, so that charter provision is not relevant.
Correct.
And then the year before that was Veterans Day. So they canceled that outright and then just only did one meeting.
Right.
So even in my 6 years here, we've never even been faced with a situation like this. And everybody was ready to come in, but we obviously want to adhere to the charter. It's what we're sworn to do.
Right.
And so we just postponed it. Tom Mercer was reelected as chairman. Councilor DeLarco was re-voted in as vice chair. And Councilor Jones was reelected to the clerk of the council. I think the chairman, hopefully this week, will have the committee assignments and some of the ad hoc committee assignments out.
Right.
You know, so we can get business moving again. And as you know, we have to redo, or at least take a look at a subcommittee level on the rules of procedure. I think Councilor Chandler might have pointed it out.
It was last done in 2018.
We would have probably done it you know, right out of the 19 gate, and we were preparing to, and then obviously the pandemic hit eventually. You know, most of the rules of procedure are basic Robert's Rules of Order, or some tweaks to accommodate our system. I think there's some issues that probably are going to go in there in terms of the ordering of some of the agenda items.
Okay.
And certainly, I think some of the decorum issues that were brought up at the meeting last week, but in previous meetings, of civility, decorum at meetings, you know, the role of the council, some additional verbiage in there about some of that stuff. I don't see a tremendous amount of changes on some of the other mechanics. Most of it's pretty basic about how to, you know, how to get called on during a meeting, and what is an ad hoc committee versus a subcommittee. And I don't expect a tremendous amount of that change, but you know, I think it is worth doing, and it is a practice that I hope to get into as each council gets elected, just like the town attorney gives them an overview of ethics and open meeting law,
which
I think is a responsibility they should at least give. Like the financial policies we now do every 2 years. Every 2 years, I have them look at the financial policies
to do a revisit
and try to take away this, well, let's not look at it for 10 years. You know, it just takes a quick review in those couple months. And before we get to January, where we're really going to hit the ground running on a lot of other stuff.
So
That's the kind of boring part, or the administrative part, right, Steve, of the, council meeting. It's required.
Back to what we were talking about, it's a process part.
Process part.
Do the process, you're going to review the process. And, oh, by the way, that includes the documentation to make sure the process continues to go.
That's right.
Absolutely. And for the listeners, if you haven't already seen the town council meeting, at least from a recording perspective, I separated three segments so that if you just want to get to the open meeting law, records, and ethics portion, that's one separate segment, approximately 40 minutes, so they can delve into that as opposed to trying to listen to the hour, I think it was an hour and 50 minute full session. So that's available.
And for those that are watching at home, you'll also be able to take a look at the slides.
Correct. And the slides are linked to, and we'll include the links to the show notes, etc. Yep. And the other piece that we can tout, because this will be out early enough, it's a community issue. Schools are at the forefront of it, but the critical conversation event coming up with the Safe Coalition and the school department at the high school on Thursday.
It couldn't have come at a better time. I wish we all could say that that we just kind of planned this, but we really didn't. In fact, I just saw Jim Derrick at the event and was able to tell him there's just not enough time in the day. At Wednesday's council meeting, they'll be considering a resolution to use $175,000 of the $300,000 given to us in the HCA from Boterra, from the cannabis store, will be going to the Safe Coalition. To also, we'll be working with the superintendent in the school district to have the Safe Coalition be the service provider for the Franklin Public Schools. To be able to deal with the substance abuse and marijuana-related incidents that they're seeing at the schools. They've been on the substance abuse task force. I think a lot of that work has been ongoing.
Right.
And the superintendent's talked about that quite a bit. I think a lot of the school committee meetings. But in the broader view, having that task force and then being able to have you know, an agency like the Safe Coalition, who will now be able to have, you know, a lot of revenue to be able to handle this stuff, it really develops a nice partnership, I think, between the grassroots at the Safe Coalition and what they've been able to accomplish, but also a lot of the struggles and issues that the school district are facing today. You know, it's a strange story a little bit. There's a high graduation rate. Our athletic teams are killing it. There's some very high level of academic achievement. There's a lot of things that are coming out of the Franklin Public Schools today that are just absolutely immeasurably excellent in so many ways, but we don't always talk about that because there are a lot of other issues dealing with some of the incidents that we've seen recently in the decorum field, and some of the hate speech that's been given out, as well as substance abuse. As we saw this past week, opioid issues are still at the top And I know that Jen and the superintendent and substance abuse task force and many other folks have been talking about a lot of the other unforeseen issues that have been going on at the high school and the middle schools and amongst our youth in town. So hopefully this develops a nice partnership for all of that. And on the 18th, there'll be this critical conversation with a lot of those stakeholders, I believe,
sure.
that I just mentioned,
yep.
certainly sponsored yep. by the SAFE Coalition, on a really great panel on mental health and substance abuse on November 18th at the high school auditorium. And you made a good plug for that. So hopefully there'll be a great attendance for that event.
Yeah, and it'll both be in person. I believe Franklin TV will be broadcasting. It'll be the live stream. And then, of course, there'll be the replays available as well. I think, and it's been mentioned, I think, by you, certainly by Sarah in other forums, this is a community issue. Of mental health and substance abuse. The schools happen to be seeing it, and clearly that needs to be addressed, and this is how we're addressing it. I think it's a bigger, broader issue, how we also address the entire community issue. Schools is just one aspect of it.
It parlays back into, to go full circle to the Strong Towns conversation mm-hmm. earlier.
Yep.
The thing I came away with out of that was a reliance and a dedication to defining what it is that our government even does.
Right.
What is our feature? What is our not just our mission, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm talking about what is it that we are expected to do and what is it that we are doing?
Mm-hmm.
And the reality, TA, is and the schools are seeing this, I think, on these issues.
Sure.
They are the epicenter of where a lot of this strife in our society is becoming.
Mm-hmm.
These problems that have been coming up don't always come and rarely come from the district itself. It's coming from outside of the district lines and coming in, and we're expecting teachers to be first responders. Virtually,
mm-hmm.
okay. We're expecting them to be right. mental health counselors. We're expecting our police officers to be mental health counselors.
Right.
You know, you can see how the fields are changing.
Mm-hmm.
We're expecting our DPW to be engineers, culverts, drainage, you name it. The lowest level worker, the newest worker to the field is going to be expected to have a higher proficiency with these more sophisticated items.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we're at that point too, as us as a field and as an industry. You know, who are we?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? And what are we expected to do? And is that sustainable?
Right.
To the presentation that hopefully a lot of your listeners will take the hour to watch that panel from this morning about, mm-hmm. about Strong Towns. But who are we, what do we do, and do we have the people that can accomplish those community demands?
Right.
We're going through our own market correction, if you will, just like yeah. the private sector is,
sure.
and just like the public are at
yeah.
home,
yeah.
about who we are and what do we do. And the challenge is, I think largely our staff, Franklin has done an unbelievable job measuring up to those standards, but I think moving forward, you know, what is the sustainability of that? And you see that across Massachusetts with over 100 police chiefs retiring in the last 2 years in different towns. I mean, there's just a sense of,
mm-hmm.
you know, is this what, you know, is this the same field of what is changing?
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, we're going to have to reconcile with that.
Yeah, the great resign, the impacts of the great resignation, to pick up on that term that's been in the media.
Yeah.
They're abroad in many aspects. You mentioned the chiefs. I've also been hearing, certainly amongst the faith communities, there's
yeah.
a number of resignations as well. And I think it gets yeah. back into kind of the communications aspect that we're also playing in part of.
Yeah.
What is the process, to your point, how do federal, state, and local play together? And then how does the community get engaged in those processes so that they do feel respected, accepted, and have some efficacy for the changes that we need to do?
Yeah, it's a fascinating conversation. I was at least happy that it was being acknowledged, because I think for a lot of local officials these days, you know, while the pandemic has crested in a lot of ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of folks at the local level feel, well, where are we going from here on out on a host of things? And and when you don't, we're problem solvers by nature. You don't get in to be a town administrator if you're not a problem solver. It's like the first thing you gotta like check off on. Do you like solving problems quickly? And when you're yes, and you don't have those solutions to those problems out of the gate, you know, it does require a certain level of discipline to go out and try to research and figure out where what we're going to do to solve those issues. But, you know, with things moving so quickly and changing so much, it's hard to keep up with all that, right, Steve? And we're, again, we're the tortoise in the race. We're not always the hare.
Your processes are by design to be relatively slow moving because you're the steady one. Ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's good stuff this morning. And we got great stuff coming up here in Franklin as well. And I hope people out there take some time to focus on the mental health panel and the substance abuse issues. You know, maybe this will be a great conversation to start, and hopefully it's one the community will help keep on going on.
Yeah, and I think to the extent that it's both the end of the year, we're in mid-November, Thanksgiving and the holidays are coming, we've got multiple other holidays through the end of the year. With the spacing of the meetings and with some other process things, there's some time for real both family discussions, community discussions, to help foster this. And we need to have those. They're going to be hard discussions, but they need to be had.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, with the holidays coming up, what a great time to reflect a little, huh? And as always on New Year's Day, there'll be a rebirth, and people will feel a little bit better, hopefully, going into 2022. And hopefully people, when they do reflect, they'll look out, you know, not just, you brought this up at a couple meetings too, a 2028, there's a natural point there.
Sure.
But I think to the speakers this morning, there is a generational, you know, it goes on every generation, every 20 years, right, where people kind of have that metamorphosis. They just don't always have a pandemic necessarily hanging in the background and some of these other dynamics that I think have only amplified some of these issues. You know, they didn't have technology 20 years ago as much as we do today and other differences. So we're going to have to all realize, even myself and many others, that we're all going to have to be able to have an open mind and adapt to the next 10 years. Because really, as you pointed out, Steve, and the speakers today said, we have to resist always the short-term victory for sometimes that longer-term view. And it's awfully hard to do these days, but it's something that that we should be rising up to that commitment. So it's good stuff.
Yeah. And I think to tease for the future, in addition to some of the pieces we've already talked of, we've got the tax rate hearing, but you've got some other kind of year-end, calendar year-end segues into our budget discussions for next year coming up as well.
We've got the Housing Authority this week. Many frequent watchers of the council meetings may have realized there's been a lot of questions about the wait list at the Franklin Housing Authority. There were rumored numbers of 6,000, 7,000 out there, which are true, but those are not necessarily all Franklin residents.
Correct.
And so Lisa Audette and the Housing Authority will be there on the 17th, in addition to the budget amendments that we had talked about earlier. And then the tax rate hearing on December 1st, we also will get Brutus Cantareggi's infamous snow presentation.
Yes!
On December 1st. It's usually a Debbie Downer meeting of wah-wah because we have to talk about snow. But anytime you have new members come in and a new elected body, snow, back to what we do and what we do as local government, you know, picking up the trash and removing snow is about as core and baseline to what we do, and we still chronically kind of underfund the basic things we're supposed to do really well. And so Brutus will go through his snow presentation, which is always a highlight of the year. And then when we look out a little further, I do expect some additional recognitions at the police department. As I quickly mentioned a little while ago, we've lost a lot of capacity down there in recent years. We've been very attractive to a lot of new candidates, but a lot of years of institutional knowledge walking out the door, and we're going to be doing some appointments of some new police officers. And of course, every year we do the annual license hearing of all the renewals.
Correct.
The good news is, I think last time I checked, there are more liquor licenses and more businesses in the common vitriol world in Franklin today, getting renewed, than there was before the pandemic.
Right.
So that is, to me, a huge bullet point that when we watch the national news and we realize and say, oh my God, this thing's going on elsewhere that must be happening here,
right.
It's actually not.
Yeah.
The business community has done, in a lot of ways, not everybody, but a lot of sectors have done a great job weathering the storm or making the decisions that were going to help them out. And as a result, right across the street out this window, we have a couple new restaurants going in. And the Gavel Public House down at the Village Mall. We've had a couple of new Dacey's Market pop up with a rebrand. There's been a whole slew of new places, the pop-up shops. There's been new folks coming in. And I think that's a good thing. I've been accused at times recently of being positive. And so I apologize to the listeners if you were looking for negativity. But really, I think that's a positive message. Here we are a couple of years going into the second winter where there's still a little uncertainty. But we've actually, Franklin's done really well. And I think a large part of that is due to the fabric of the town and the overall investment in the community. It's been good.
And I think, if anything, that gives us an opportunity to help communicate more so. Because while we have a limit, like other towns do, in terms of the liquor store licenses, there's a cap on those. We don't have the similar limit on the restaurant licenses accordingly. And that's more or less, if you come and build it, we will provide it for you. And that's a marketing piece that we have underutilized, I think, respectfully.
It's really quickly on this topic, which is one that's near and dear to my heart. It's a fascinating story. Some people 40 years ago in this town had the foresight, when they had a one-time option put forth, when they were doing a semi by state and alcohol industry standards, when they were doing an overhaul of the alcohol system, the town of Franklin got the option to have a no quota system for its restaurants for services on and drinking on site. Restaurants, taverns, taps, etc. And if you were to look at our quota by the state today, if we were to have a cap, we still do not meet the cap. Yet we have no cap. And ultimately, we should be the restaurant mecca. Should be the restaurant mecca of Metro West South. There should be nobody else contending with us. Because the Worcester Business Journal, a few years ago, did an incredible story and profile right as the pandemic started, so I think a lot of people missed it, on the cities and towns across the state that have no quota system. And there was only two dozen or so municipalities throughout the state that have the same system as we do, including Worcester, by the way, and including Marlboro, by the way. And they were geographically splintered all throughout the state, as they should be. And it was, looking back at it, it was a one-time thing. Those cities and towns opted in, and now here we are 20, 30, 40, 50 years later. And I agree with you. We've always been nervous, I think, of alerting people to this, to this uniqueness, because we're afraid, in some ways, the state's going to take away our power to do that, or other towns will complain about us because they're at a competitive disadvantage, and we need to fix this. And the Worcester Business Journal kind of basically threw that out. I mean, anybody can go back and read it and look at it and take a look at that story. And I agree with you, Steve. I think it's something that when you look at the town market study that came out from MAPC a couple years ago, it clearly showed.
We have opportunity.
We have a lot of room to grow in the restaurant industry. We've got the distillery. We've got 67. We've got La Cantina, Teddy Gallagher's, Santa Fe Burrito. You know, the new shed, the new restaurants that are coming with the Gallo Public. We've had a lot of really good places come here. Recently. But we have nowhere come close to filling the appetite and thirst that clearly is going to other municipalities for food and beverage.
From a marketing study, and then just from our own dietary preferences, we've got a healthy, diverse appetite being fulfilled. But the spectrum in food is broader than that, and we don't have everything covered yet. So there is opportunity here.
We have a lot of areas. Lily's nodding her head. She's in agreement, even though she got the Starbucks across the street. At the end of the day, she like a lot of folks, and this is I hate to say it, but this is what we were just talking about, generational transformation and metamorphosis. You know, the reality is to your point, dietary and wish needs are just different than they were 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of discretionary income that are looking for places to go out in Franklin. And so as we look out in that window in 10 years, you know, we have a lot of places like the Coffee House and Black Box and others that fill that entertainment need. Is there more that we need?
Mm-hmm.
Restaurants, you know, we can be an incubator for this. We just have to allow it. Now I'm hungry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, now for the listeners, it's about noon, and it is literally lunchtime. Anyways, fun stuff, Steve.
Yeah, it's fun a good stuff. Time to take a break, and we'll go eat while everybody else listening. Hopefully, we've whet your appetite enough to be able to have some either liquid libation, whatever's appropriate at the time, or whatever refreshment you need.
Yeah.
thank you both for taking time today to talk Franklin. Yeah. And we'll be back again for another session. And for the listeners, of course, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.